come to Woodmere in the summer, they speak then, and it had an indelible mark on me. Don't remember what it spoke about.
Yeah, what was it?
Bai Shekula Tchelis. We spoke about that. That Shabbos time was there. And it's a real pleasure to have you as the first of many, many more Mitzvah Shem. Shiur and Mitzvah Shem.
Oh, man. Shagai, here's some Marum Kamashi you want to pass around. Okay, there are Makaros sheets. We'll try to stick to them as much as possible. And we have a time for Meir, but we're just davening when I finish.
When you finish.
Okay, great. I hold a rein of time, so should be good. So it's a pleasure to meet everyone. Hopefully we'll have opportunities to meet more person to person and actually get to know people's names. But for now, it's nice to know your faces. Nice to see your shul. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. And as Alon said, b'siyat d'shmaya, more opportunities to learn together in the future. So I want to talk tonight about a topic that I think is fascinating. It's not going to sound fascinating, which is why Alon made me change the title when I originally gave it to him. It doesn't sound fascinating if you say it what it really is, so we made a vague title instead. But as we get a little bit into it, as we understand the Makoros a little bit more, so you'll see it's a very, very fascinating topic, which is very telling about the transmission of the Masorah, about the Kabbalah Satorah and then the Masira Satorah from Har Sinai all the way down to our generation. That's an important thing to focus on right now, obviously, as we prepare for the Yom Tov of Shavuos, for the Chag Matan Torah Seinu, for the Chag of Kabbalah Satorah, when we're supposed to pay attention to the transmission, to the Masorah, to the Shalshelas HaMasorah, to how the Torah gets all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai to us. There are so many bits and pieces and so many nuanced details as to how the Torah is transmitted, the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaal Peh. The topic we'll talk about, B'siyat D'shmaya, is about the blend of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh in a very, very unique way. And that's the topic of Kri Uchsiv. If we're familiar with the topic of Kri Uchsiv, we know what it is. If we don't, so the literal translation of the words is Kri Uchsiv. Sometimes you have a word in the Torah or in Nevi'im or in Ksuvim, which is written a certain way but pronounced a different way entirely. You have it in the English language as well. My son, I feel so bad for him. He's learning how to spell. He's learning how to read. So he comes home with the spelling words that he has to get tested on. So they tell him, spell soup. So it's impossible to spell soup. You write S-O-O-P or S-U-P-E. It's impossible. But then you try to read it. It's S-O-U-P. It shouldn't be pronounced soup. It should be pronounced soup. It doesn't make any sense. There's a Kri and a Chsiv. There's a way it's written, and there's a way it's pronounced, or Alon's name, for example. It's written a certain way, and we know you're supposed to pronounce, not all of us know the right way to pronounce it, but there is a way. I happen to have an uncle, Alon, so it works out, so I know, I'm getting it kind of right, right? Yeah, so there's a Kri and a Chsiv. There's a way it's written, and there's a way it's pronounced. You have to learn how to say certain things. Most Baalei Kriya, Baalei Kore, they know how to read the words that are Kri and a Chsiv. We have a huge, I know at least one Baal Kore in the crowd from the other side of the world. But someone like me gets a haftarah, and then you're reading something from Nevi'im Ksuvim, you get tripped up all the time with a word in the middle of the page and then a word on the side of the page, a Kri Uchsiv, written one way, pronounced another way. Now, if we were looking through Chazal to try to find where this comes up, so we wouldn't necessarily find the words Kri Uchsiv. If you look carefully in throughout Shas, you wouldn't necessarily find the term Kri Uchsiv that represents the sugya we're talking about. You would find a different machlokas. What would that machlokas be called? Yesh Eim LaMasoras or Yesh Eim LaMikra, excellent. You find this in a lot of places in Shas, particularly the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Dalid, Daf Gimel, that whole blot and a half really has a long discussion about the different mandamars, different opinions as to Yesh Eim LaMikra, Yesh Eim LaMasoras, which basically means when we have a word which is able to be read one way and is written a different way, Kri, Uchsiv, right, it's written one way and pronounced a different way, so what's the emphasis? What's the primary value in terms of halacha? Do we judge based on the pronunciation or do we judge based on the writing? So you have that throughout the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Two more famous examples. You have in source number one on your sheet, the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, the very beginning of the Masechta. The Gemara is trying to learn how many walls a sukkah has to have. So the Gemara says we could darshan this from Sukkim. The Psukkim say, Basukos teshu shivas yamim kol azrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukos. That's twice basukos. Leman yidu d'orisechem ki basukos hoshavti es b'nei Yisrael. The Pasuk says three times the word basukos. So how many walls should that imply? So we would want to guess three, but the Gemara has to be much more complicated than that, just to make sure that as many people as possible stop learning Gemara after getting to that Vav and Sukkah. But the Gemara says that you would do math like this. The math would go as follows. Two of those times, the word Basukos is written Chaser, meaning there's no Vav. The second Vav doesn't appear there. And one time it's written Malay. So when it's written Malay, Basukos with the Vav at the end, we know it's referring to plural, two walls. So that's two walls. And then you have two more instances of Bas Sukkos written chaser without that extra vav. So now the question is as follows. Should we do the math like this? Since only once is it male, it's two walls. And the next two times is chaser, so that's two more walls. That's four walls. Comes the halacha Moshe Misinai and takes away one of the walls, and it's 3.5. Or should we start with 6 walls, or 2.5, sorry. Or should we start with 6 walls and say Bas Sukkos, Bas Sukkos, Bas Sukkos, even though twice it's written chaser, how do we pronounce it each time? Plural, Bas Sukkos. So each time it's really referring to double the amount of walls. 3 times 2 is 6. Excellent, really good. 3 times 2 is 6. That's starting with 6. We take away 1 because you need to know about the Mitzvah Sukkah, so we start with 5. You take away you start with 4. You take away that one wall for Halacha Moshe Misinai, you have 3.5, which is what the Halacha we paskin. So the Gemara says that machlokas is based on the question of yesh em lamikra or yesh em lamasoras. What should we focus on? Should we focus on the way it is written, yesh em lamasoras, the way the tradition has it that we write the word? It's malay sometimes, it's chaser other times, do the math accordingly. Or no, the mikra, yesh em lamikra, the way we pronounce it, we always pronounce it basukos in plural, so we should always count it as double the amount of walls, and that's the machlokas the Gemara says we are referring to over there. Another example, the Gemara in Maseches Krisos, and Daf Yud Zayin, the Gemara there, you don't have to learn Krisus. Anyone here who's opened the Shev Shmaitza has learned this Gemara before. The Gemara says that if you have a case of an Asham Tali, an Asham Tali is brought when a person is unsure. We should know this from the beginning of davening. Or that's what they say. The first thing, when you get davening, the first thing you get sacrificed is karbanos, because nobody actually says them. But if we said karbanos, so we would see that there are different types of karban Asham that we're supposed to offer. So there's an Asham Tali, and Asham Tali is brought, let's say, for example, the Gemara is talking about when a person has a suffix, they're not sure whether they ate chaleb. So what exactly is that case? So the Gemara darshan the pasuk and says you had a certain amount of meat slices in front of you. You're not quite sure if you ate chaleb or if you ate kasher meat. So what's the case exactly? Is it that you had one piece of meat and you're not sure if it was chaleb or if it was kasher meat? Or you had two pieces of meat, one of them might have been chaleb, you're not sure which one you ate, chaleb or kasher, that's the suffix. So how do we know which is the case? The Gemara says it's based on the pasuk. The pasuk says mitzvos, we'll leave the rest of the pasuk for now, mitzvos, but the pasuk spells it with one vav, which would be spelled as mitzvas, which would be singular, possessive, but singular. So is it supposed to be looked at as plural, mitzvos, the way we read it, which would mean there are two slices in front of you and you chose one, you're not sure if you ate kasher or treif? Or should we read it as mitzvas, which we don't pronounce it that way, but we should judge it based on the masoras, the way it's written, the ksiv, as opposed to the kri, and then we would say, even if there was one piece of meat in front of you, and you have a suffix, if it was chaleb, or if it was kasher meat, then you too would bring in asham tali. So the Gemara says, that's tali, that depends on this very machlokes, yesh em la mikra, yesh em la masoras, which we said before, is really the same question of kri, uksiv. The way sometimes something is written is not always the way it's pronounced, and it has halachic significance. How do we paskin? Regardless of how we paskin, Yeshem Lamikra, Yeshem Lamasaurus, the Gemara brings so many different opinions. Tosas and Masechah Sanhedrin and Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, a long Tosas over there. So in the beginning of that Tosas, they point out that the Ikar is the following. It's not true in most of the instances, but the Ikar is the following. As long as we're able to blend the Masores and the Mikra, the Kri and the Chsib, meaning as long as we can put them together and learn two things from the Pasuk instead of one, we should always try our best to do that. If the two are able to go hand in hand, we should learn both the Kri and the Chsib, the Masores and the Mikra. In an instance, which it seems like is really the majority, in an instance where we can't possibly resolve the two, they're at their stira with each other. They don't combine well. They don't blend well. So in such a case, we have to choose one of them. That's when you have a machlokas yesh em lamikra, yesh em lamasoras. What's a good example of that? So on Amud Beis there in that Gemara in Masechah Sanhedrin, Dalet Amud Beis, the Gemara has a pasuk, shalosh pamim bashana yera'e kol zochurchas pnei Hashem. That 3 times a year we're supposed to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, see Yera'eh HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mikdash during the Shalosh Regalim. So the Pasuk says Yera'eh, and the Gemara says it's Yira and Yera'eh, meaning Kederach Sheba Liros, the same way that you come to see Hashem, Kach Ba Lira'o, so too you have to come to be seen by Hashem. Whatever the halachic significance is there, the Gemara assumes we can learn both Mikra and Masores, Kri and Chsiv, and the Tosas say that's the rule, we should always try to do that. So that's where you see in the Gemara, again, the term Kri and Chsiv doesn't come up so much, but Yeshem LaMikra, Yeshem LaMasoras, as you pointed out earlier on. Now, what is the deal with this Yeshem LaMikra? What is the deal with Kri and Chsiv? Where in the world does such a thing come from? How could such a thing exist? So look in source number 2. It's a Gemara Nedarim. Now, it's not really anyone who's going to be a nitpicky person over here, which I could tell already some of you from your faces are, but anyone who's a nitpicker, so if you look in source number 2, you won't really find what I'm referring to, but the Rishonim assume that what we're talking about is here too. So just trust me on this one, and I'll hold your hand through it. The Gemara says in the Maseches Nedarim, on Daf Lamed Zayin, that Mikra Sofim, V'Iter Sofrim, Kuryan V'lo Ksivan, Ksivan V'lo Kiryan, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, which basically means all of the phenomenal instances, the outstanding instances of the way things are written in an abnormal fashion in the Torah. So all of those cases, including kri velo ksiv, ksiv velo kri, which doesn't sound like what we're talking about, but it also includes kri uksiv, cases in which there's a discrepancy between the way something is written and the way it's pronounced. All of those things are what, says the Gemara? Halacha lemoshe mi-Sinai, tradition all the way from Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu was told on the mountain that that's the way we're supposed to write the Sefer Torah. Okay, so that's an interesting concept the Gemara raises for us. Now, what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara in Maseches Megillah gives us some examples. The truth is the rest of this Gemara in Nedarim gives us examples as well, but the Gemara in Megillah will be more relatable. Megillah Daf Chaf Hey, the Gemara tells us, let's say, for example, sometimes you have the Torah uses not such nice wording. The way we observe it, the word Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey in the Tochacha is that in last week's Tochacha or it's in the following one? Right, so in Kisavo, the Torah says, Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey. I'll say it once, but we're not supposed to say Yish Galena. That's apparently a very explicit term for illicit relations. So every Baal Kori knows when you see the word Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey, you don't pronounce it that way. What do you pronounce it as? Yishkevena. You say Yishkevena. So the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Chaf Hey says the reason is we're trying to avoid using such a Lashon. We just want to say a Lashon Nekiya, a cleaner Lashon. That's what one of the examples the Rambam brings in Chil Gimel and Mor Nevuchim as to why the Hebrew language is referred to as Lashon HaKodesh. People are familiar with this? The Hebrew language is referred to as Lashon HaKodesh, correct? Where we come from, Lashon HaKodesh is what?
Yiddish.
Yiddish is really Lashon HaKodesh. Yeah, we all know that. But the Rambam, whatever, he was a Sephardi, so that's different. The Rambam thought that Hebrew was Lashon HaKodesh. Okay, a real Ashkenazi Jew knows what the real Lashon HaKodesh is. So why is it called?
Yiddish is Lashon HaKodesh.
Okay, HaKodeshim also. Okay, good. So we refer to Hebrew as Lashon HaKodesh also. Why? David Cohen in Brooklyn. People know of David Cohen? It's like one of the Gedolei Ador, one of the biggest poskim in the generation. So every time he sneezes, a sefer comes out. He's like unbelievable, he's prolific. So one of the series of Sfarim that he's written is called Lashon HaKodesh. My Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita always quotes this sefer, a very fun little, I've looked at it in the library. What he does is he basically takes Yiddish terms, Yiddish, aphorisms, phrases that we all say, and he tries to show you the source in Chazal where that Yiddish phrase came from. For example, when someone's going to take a long time to do something, so you'll say, yeah, we'll take care of it in a yar un a mitvach, in a year and a Wednesday. What in the world does that mean, in a year and a Wednesday? So Rav David Cohen says that, if you look in the book, you'll find this. Rav David Cohen says, no, in the beginning of Maseches Ksubis, the first Mishnah tells us that first you have Eris and then you have Kedushin, engagement and marriage. The marriage usually takes place a year after the Kedushin, and it takes place on a Wednesday. So in a year and a Wednesday, we'll take care of it. Meaning it's a phrase that's Yiddishism, but it came from a Torah Dika source. That's why it's called Lashon HaKodesh. But classically speaking, Lashon HaKodesh is obviously the Hebrew language. The Rambam says, why is it called Lashon HaKodesh? The Ramban doesn't agree with this. The Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Kisisa doesn't agree with this. But the Rambam suggests that it's called Lashon HaKodesh because it has no unclean language in it. It's a totally Lashon Nekiya. It's totally clean. So the question is from something like Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey, but we read it differently. There are other examples as well. Tes Ches Vav Resh Yud Mem. Also in the Tochacha, there are other words as well. But the Ramban has his kashas. But that's why we call it, according to the Rambam, Lashon Nekiya. So that's another example of a Kriyuch Siv. No, the pasuk says Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey. We read it Yishkevena. We read it entirely differently. So that's a Kriyuch Siv. Says the Gemara in Maseches Megillah. The Gemara in Nedarim here fills in for us. That's apparently a halacha lemoshe mi-Sinai. Now, where in the world does this come from? That one example I understand. You know, Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey, the Torah didn't want us to say it because it's so inappropriate, so it gave us a different way of pronouncing it. But I don't know, sometimes the Torah says Nun Ayin Resh, Na'ar, and we pronounce it Naira. Or sometimes in the Vimek Suvim, you have all sorts of wild, you have some in Rus, you have a bunch in Rus, a whole bunch of wild Kriyuch Sivs that you could never have predicted. You don't have a Lashon Nekiya reason to say so. So where do those things come from? So here you find the classical Rishonim come out of the woodworks to try to give suggestions, and then you start to wonder how these people became classical Rishonim with the suggestions they come up with. You got to see some of these inside. You look in source number 3, for example, the Radak. The Radak says this in multiple places, particularly it's in the Hakdama to Sefer Yoshua, to Nevi'im Rishonim, the end of the Hakdama to Sefer Yoshua. However, anyone could help me on this afterwards, I could not find that on the Bar Ilan. I don't know where the Hakdama to the Nevi'im Rishonim is. But he also says it in Shmuel. So you have it here from Shmuel Beis. The Radak suggests the following fascinating idea. Again, you would throw stones at me if I said it, but the Radak said it. So throw stones at him if you want. So the Radak says that during the Gullus Rishon, the first diaspora that we were experiencing, we weren't in Eretz Yisrael, we didn't have everything clear and everything in order, so we started to lose track a little bit of the Masorah. And what happened was there were various texts of, let's say, Nevi'im and Ksuvim at least, that were floating around. And we lost track of how to say and how to write and how to pronounce certain words. And because of that, when Ezra came and tried to be Masader, everything, put everything together, the Anshei Knesset HaGadol were trying to put together the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim and try to write in the right way, they found different girsos. They found girsos that were contradictory in terms of the Psukim. And in order to resolve in some funny way those contradictions, what they did was they made a compromise. The compromise sheet was as follows. They would write one girsa, and they would tell you to pronounce it a different way. Isn't that fascinating? We lost track of the Masorah. We lost track of the way the writing was supposed to be. So we wrote it one way and told you to pronounce it another way. Now, the first issue that you have with that is the Rambam tells us in the Yigim Ikrim, Zos HaTorah Lo Temu Klefes. We expect a full, fine, perfect, unambiguous, unchanged, unaltered Masorah. We never expect it to change. Chas v'shalom, we should lose track of the way words are pronounced and written. That's so hard to imagine. So a lot of the Achronim don't appreciate, the Rishonim and the Achronim don't appreciate what the Radak said. Additionally, another question is, what do we really solve? If we write it one way and pronounce it another way, we didn't save either. They're both wrong. We don't know what the right answer is. So either leave it vague, leave it out, or paskin, choose one. But to write both is neither here nor there. You can't have your cake and eat it too. So the Radak is very, very difficult to stomach. The Abarbanel didn't like this at all. The Abarbanel in his Hakdama to Nevim Achronim in Yirmiyahu, you'll see why it was Yirmiyahu in a second, a doozy of an opinion over here, but the Abarbanel suggests that the Radak is dead wrong based on the reasons we just said. And the Abarbanel says something entirely different. He says that there are times that the Nevi'im, they taka said the words in these ambiguous ways. They said the words in ways which were unclear and weren't fully understandable. Ezra and the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, when they saw these words, listen to this, they couldn't figure out what the words meant. Now, Ezra knew every word of Nevi'im, of Ksuvim, was written with Ruach HaKodesh. It was either said with Ruach HaKodesh or written with Ruach HaKodesh, Nevi'im versus Ksuvim, but it was definitely instilled and infused with Ruach HaKodesh. So it can't be it's wrong. So Ezra said, it can't be it's wrong, but I don't understand what it means, so I know what I'll do. I'll put the word as it was written on the page, but I'll tell people how to pronounce it in a way that it actually makes sense of the pasuk. Now, if you go through every example, it won't explain each case why the Kriyuch Siv is there, but it'll explain a lot of them. When it was unclear to Ezra and the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, he wrote it one way and pronounced it another way so that we'd have a clearer understanding of the pasuk in front of us. A fascinating thing. And here's where the Abarbanel goes wild. The Abarbanel says, you look in Yirmiyahu, you'll find double the amount of Kriyuch Siv that you find in any other Sefer. You just find endless Kriyuch Siv in Sefer Yirmiyahu. Why is that? So he says, historically, Yirmiyahu was young when he was a Navi. He was young, he wasn't fully articulate yet, he wasn't smooth in his presentation, and because of that, he spoke in such a way that it was very ambiguous, very unclear. So you find time and again that there were words that were hard to understand in the Navi Yirmiyahu's speeches. And because of that, Ezra had to constantly fix it, constantly touch it up with the Kriyuch Siv throughout the Sefer. That is an interesting, fascinating statement that, again, none of us would have said on our own, but that's what the Abarbanel suggested. My Rebbe Rav Shechter, it's in his Sefer Mipnei HaRav, he says one time they had a Rebbe's meeting in Yeshiva University, and they were discussing a candidate for the presidency. So one of the candidates, I know who it was, but it's not for the recording, one of the candidates for the presidency who was brought up at the meeting, the Rav of Soloveitchik said, absolutely not, b'shum panim v'ofen, we can't take him as the president of YU. So they said, why not? So he said, this person who you're considering for a potential candidate for the presidency of Yeshiva University, he believes there were two authors to Yeshayahu. He believes there were two Yeshayas and there were two different authors to the Sefer. That's an old academic critical view of the Nevi'im, which we don't subscribe to, and we can't accept such a person as president. So one of the Rosh Yeshiva raised his hand and said, but Rav Soloveitchik, the Abarbanel said things like that all the time. The Abarbanel said a lot of funny things. So the Rav responded, Enachnami, I wouldn't take the Abarbanel as the president of YU either. So I don't know if the Rav had this Abarbanel in mind. I don't know if the Rosh Yeshiva had this Abarbanel in mind, but he certainly could have. He certainly could have. An interesting comment to the Abarbanel. Again, hard to swallow, hard to imagine. That's the pshat that we would accept as traditionalists, Orthodox Jews. So if you look in source 4, you have the Radvaz. The Radvaz has much more of the simple, straightforward, Emunah Pshuta type of approach, which it's definitely more of the yeshivish answer, definitely helps us get closer to the MS. Still going to be hard to understand. The Radvaz was asked this very question, how could it be that there are Kriyuch Sivs? How could it be there's discrepancy between the way something's written and the way something's pronounced? Doesn't seem to make sense. So Radvaz says, I understand that it's hard to believe, but halach l'moshe v'sinai. We saw Gemara Nedarim. The Gemara Nedarim says that Moshe Rabbeinu was told at Har Sinai that this is the way that the Torah should write it, this is the way that it should be pronounced, this is the way it should be written in Navi, this is the way it should be pronounced. And Shai, that's the end of the story. There's not really much to question, says the Radvaz. Now, thank you very much, Radvaz. That's a helpful, it's definitely a firm answer. But what's the pshat? If it's Allah HaMashmi Sinai, why would it be that a Kadosh Baruch Hu or the Nevi'im subsequently would decide to say things in such a way that it was ambiguous, that it was unclear, that we had to now teach it a different way and read it differently than it's written? Why would anyone, lichatchila, in the first instance, when they were making up the Torah, when they were making up the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, why would anyone design it in such a way that there are Kriyuchsiv? That seems to be counterintuitive. We wouldn't want to have a document that's so unclear. So why would we have such a thing? So the Maharal comes to the rescue over there. The Maharal in his Sefer Tiferes Yisrael. Tiferes Yisrael is a very worthwhile Sefer to learn of the Maharal. I'm not personally so exposed to the Torah of the Maharal. My Rebbeim didn't really give it over to me so much. But from what I've seen in Tiferes Yisrael, it's a very helpful, first of all, opening to the way of learning of the Maharal, the way of approaching and breaking down large topics over the course of many, many prakim. It's very, very clear and very methodical in that way. Additionally, it's really an introduction to Torah Judaism, literally. It's an introduction to what it means to be Jewish, what it means to have a Torah, what the Torah means, what time and mitzvot are. He really has a lot of the yesodos, a lot of the fundamentals. It's really a preparation for Shavuos, which he writes in one of his introductions. Tiferes Yisrael is supposed to be so. So in the 66th parak, I think there's 70 prakim in Tiferes Yisrael. So in parak Samach Vav, the Maharal deals with this question, and Malbim also talks about this across Tanakh. They both suggest as follows. They say that everyone else was saying academic answers. The answer is like this. The Nevi'im, the Torah obviously, and also the Nevi'im, wanted to express multiple things with some words. And in order to express and condense, compress into one word, multiple meanings, sometimes the Torah or the Nevi'im would utilize the method of kriyuchsiv, meaning they would write something a certain way, and they'd ask you to pronounce it a different way. And in so doing, what they accomplished is that every time you read this word, you were able to, if you had the brain for it, if you had the seichel for it, if you had the depth of understanding, you would see there are really multiple levels of meaning, multiple levels of interpretation to this very word. One is written right in front of you, the way that it's composed, the letters in front of you on the page, and the other is the way it's pronounced. It gives you an additional level, a deeper level of interpretation to every word. And the Maharal, we can't go through it now for lack of time, but the Maharal gives excellent examples actually from Sefer Rus, which are really helpful. If you look inside, and again, Perek Samach Vav, and the Tiferes Yisrael, the Maharal, I don't think it's on the source sheet, but if you look inside, you'll find it. He has very beautiful, very, very beautiful examples from Sefer Rus, which are worth, the Megillas Rus, sorry, which are worth looking at. But the Maharal says, and the Malbim follows suit, that the idea is that the words express more than one level of meaning, and you're able to compress so much into one word. That's the beauty not only of the Hebrew language, but especially of the Torah. The Hebrew language in general is this way, by the way. The Hebrew language is a language which is so beautiful and so impactful because of the way that you can talk with such precision. I think the Ramchal writes this in one place in his Ksavim. One of the lesser-known Ksavim, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzata, writes that the Hebrew language has three factors going for it that make it Lashon HaKodesh. The first two aren't important right now. The third that he recognizes is that when a person talks Hebrew, they're able to contain so much in so few words. And that's Maila. That's a beautiful level of Kedusha that the Hebrew language has. And the Torah, Kal v'chomer, the Torah can compress so much into so little. That's Kvoda v'tefarta shel Torah. The Teferes HaTorah, the beauty, the splendor of Torah, is that so much can be included in so few letters. So Kriyuchsiv is one example of such an instance where you can compact and compress so much into one word. That's what the Maharal and the Malbim suggest is the Pshat in all Kriyuchsiv. Okay, so Hashkafically, in terms of Machshava, we're starting to get a little more comfortable. Not perfectly comfortable, but a little more comfortable with the concept of Kriyuchsiv. Anyone have any questions?
How does the Maharal know what the instance is where the word is completely non-existent in Rusak?
The Gemara includes that in the examples of Kri and Veloksivim, things which are not written but are read. So that's also Halachal Moshe Misina. That's the starting point. How do you fit that into what the Maharal said, that there's double levels of meaning? So the Maharal does deal with that, but it's a different shmooze. But you keep reading from Samachay.
There's no word,
the word isn't there, and we say something. Exactly. There are other times where the word is there and we don't say it. So the Gemara mentions all those examples. What we just said, David's pointing out, from the Maharal doesn't answer those questions because you're not saying two levels there, you're skipping one. So the Maharal deals with each of those things in the previous chapter and the subsequent chapters in Tiferes Yisrael.
I thought that the term could have been given to either Malachim or other nations.
You have to come to the other side of town to hear a question that starts with, isn't there a Zug? I haven't gotten that in Pico, you know what I'm saying? I like that, though. I like it. Yeah, what's the Zug?
What
no, say what you're saying.
So, when did we become the Torah? So you can hear somewhere.
Yeah.
So that the Torah had the potential of being given to maybe
Ezra,
to the Malachim, so that it would have been read differently had it been given to others. Can you answer it that way?
Interesting. I'm not familiar. Maybe. What? Where is? Do you know where that's written? What type of place that's in?
That's what I said.
Yeah. No. Okay. So I don't know. Efshekem and Zagin, but I don't know from it personally. Yeah. So what happens in Hashkava and Machshava in philosophy, so that we've touched on, just to touch the surface of in terms of Kriyuch Siv. What about Halacha Lamaisa? There's a glaring, glaring halachic problem with the issue of Kriyuch Siv. Can anyone guess what the problem is? The halacha is as follows. The halacha, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Siman Kuf Lamed Tes Siv Gimel. The halacha is that when a person is a Baal Kairei, when he reads from the Torah, he has to absolutely read the words inside. You have this issue a lot with, you have it with a lot of Baal Kriya, but more importantly, more commonly, you have it with Bar Mitzvah boys. They memorize the laning, and then, you know, by the end of the Aliyah, they're looking at their friends while they're saying, you know, the three words of the Aliyah. So that's a problem. You're supposed to read, you have to read every single word of the laning inside from the klaf. You have from the Rambam, source number 5, but I quoted from the Shulchan Aruch passing this way, that you have to read every word inside. In fact, that's why the Shulchan Aruch says in that very Sif, that a person who is blind, a Summa, may not take an Aliyah. Okay, we have potentially ways around this, but initially the Shulchan Aruch writes that a Summa cannot take an Aliyah for that reason, because he can't read what's inside. He can only say Baal Peh, even if he knows by heart, he's not able to read from inside. So what's the issue with Kriyuch Siv? The word there is written, Yud Shim Gimel Lamed Nun Hei Netaycha. What am I going to say? I'm going to say Yishkevena. What's the issue? It's Baal Peh. I'm saying it by heart. I'm not reading inside. Isn't that a problem? So that seems to be a major question. That seems to be a major problem. The truth is that the Rishonim dealt with this problem. You have in source number 6, the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef in that very simon, but he's quoting from a Chuvas of Rashba. The Chuvas of Rashba. The Rashba was asked this very question. How could it be that we have a halacha of Kriyuch Siv, and yet we're reading the Torah, and we're ostensibly reading Baal Peh, which is, in all other cases, totally impermissible. So how could it be that we have cases of Kriyas HaTorah Baal Peh? That's us, sir. We're not allowed to do that. So the Rashba gives an answer, which again, very frum, very nice, very straight and to the point, but a little bit vague. What does the Rashba answer if you're looking inside the Beis Yosef in source number 6? Halachal Moshe Misina. Yeah, that's what I would answer my kid if he was bothering me also, right? Halachal Moshe Misina. Stop asking. Just accept it. Emunah Pshuta. So Shkayach, so there's a halacha Moshe Misinai, that seems to be the right answer, it seems to be on target, but what does that answer mean? What is the halacha Moshe Misinai? So the way to look at it, and this is already a brisker chakira, we'll see, right now we're saying it as a, we're just terming it a brisker chakira, but if you flip the page, you'll see that there's actually a rebel of brisker rev about this. So the brisker chakira goes as follows, we're not up to it yet, but you'll see soon. The question is as follows, what does this halacha Moshe Misinai mean? There's really two ways to look at it. Anyone take a stab at it? How could you understand the halacha Moshe Misinai here?
You are reading something, you're just pronouncing it differently.
Excellent. Anyone have another way of saying it?
The issue of reading Baal Peh doesn't apply.
Excellent, exactly. Two sides, very good. Two sides. Here are the two possibilities in the Chakira. Excellent. One possibility, and we'll go with yours first. I'm not talking about you, I'm just talking about your idea, more Balabatish. So the first idea is as follows, in a good way though, in a good way. The first way is as follows. The first way you could say it is like this. Usually it's true that the halacha says that you have to read the word inside when you pronounce it. You can't say a word from the Torah Baal Peh. Usually that's the case. Comes a halacha Moshe Misinai and says our case of Kriyuch Siv is exceptional, is different, it's unique in that there is no halacha of reading from inside from Mitoch HaKsav here. The halacha is that in this case you're allowed to read Baal Peh. That's the first possibility. The second possibility, which is what you suggested a second ago, is no. This is fascinating chiddush. This would be a big, big chiddush. But it's possible to say, no, the halacha Moshe Misinai is fancier than that. The halacha Moshe Misinai comes and says that even though it's true that the word is written with the letters Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey, Nun Ayin Resh, whatever the case might be, when you read the Kri to that Ksiv, what the halacha Moshe Misinai says is that is the pronunciation of the word that you're reading inside. Meaning, is the pshat that you can read Baal Peh because it's Kri or Ksiv, it's not written the way it's pronounced. So you're reading Baal Peh, this is a unique exception to the rule. Or is the pshat, no, the Torah is saying a chiddush, a halacha Moshe Misinai, that that's not called reading Baal Peh. That you're actually reading the word, it's just pronounced differently. This word, even though it looks like it's written one way, it's like soup. It's written as south, but we say it as soup. It's not saying it by heart. We're reading the word soup. We just know it's pronounced differently than the way it is written. Those are the two possibilities. Now, there's actually a tremendous nafkamina halacha lemaisa, which the post can talk about. The Magen Avraham in his commentary here on Siman Kuf Lamed Tes. Excellent. The Magen Avraham in his commentary on Siman Kuf Lamed Tes here. I didn't really put it here on the page, but it's embedded into source number 7. The Magen Avraham comments, and he says that even though it's true that you're reading the word Baal Peh, it's still totally acceptable, which sounds like your example, meaning this side of the Chakira, that even though it's true that generally speaking, you are not allowed to read a word in the Torah, any single word in the Torah, Baal Peh, without looking inside at the word, this is an exception. In a case of Kriyuch Siv, you are in fact allowed you have a license to read the word Baal Peh without actually looking inside. That's what the Magen Avraham seems to suggest. You could argue, you could ding zach on this read of the Magen Avraham, but that's what he seems to suggest. The Shai Ephraim, Margolios, the Shai Ephraim, Rabbi Ephraim, Zalman Margolios, so he suggests differently. He says, B'shum Panavi Ophim, you can't say such a thing. Chas V'shalom, you can't say that you're allowed to read any word of the Torah Baal Peh. It's enough in a halach and Shulchan Aruch. Every word has to be read from inside. Rather, says the Shai Ephraim, seemingly, what's the halach on Lushim Yisinai? Like you said, not that there's an exception over here that you're allowed to read Baal Peh, but rather it's not considered reading Baal Peh in the case of a Kri Uchsiv. Because in the case of a Kri Uchsiv, this is the pronunciation of the word inside. And the Nafka Mina, it seems, the poskim say, is the following. If you get to the word Yud Shin Gimel Lamin Hey, and you're going to say Yishkevena, can you look at your friends at that point during the Kriyas HaTorah? When the word is written a certain way and you're pronouncing it a different way, do you actually have to read the word inside that you're saying? If the assumption is that this is an exceptional case and you don't have to read it inside, then you mamish don't have to read it inside. You could look up while you're reading that word. If you did, it would be a kasher kriya.
So according to the Magen Avraham, it's okay, right?
It would be okay according to the Magen Avraham. The Shai Ephraim says absolutely not. No way. Or Ephraim Zalman Margolios says no way. You have to read even this word inside. You have to look at the word. Think of like the Shemos Hashem in the Berachas Kohanim. Scan your with your eyes, but don't say it out loud. You have to look at the word, even though you're not saying that word. You'll say a different one, but you have to make eye contact with the word in front of you. The Prima Gadim tags on another Nafka Mina. You look in source number 7. I put the Prima Gadim for you in this commentary, Eshal Avram, on the Magen Avraham. So the Prima Gadim suggests another Nafka Mina. Let's say a bit of wax falls onto the word again. Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Hey. That's the example we keep using. Wax falls on that word. So that word is not legible. You can't read it. Now the Sefer Torah is not puzzle. Let's assume for now the Sefer Torah is not puzzle in such an instance, but you can't possibly read the word because it's covered by some wax. So are you still allowed to do Kriyas HaTorah from that Sefer? So the Prima Gadim says, basically, it's a Nafka Mina to our case. If you're allowed to read all these words Baal Peh anyways, so what's the difference? If it's covered or it's not covered, it's there underneath. So you'll read it Baal Peh the same way you read it Baal Peh. If it was exposed, you would read it Baal Peh. But no, if the Pshat is, you have to look inside, you have to make eye contact with the word while you're reading it because you're going to pronounce this word differently, but that still is reading this word. It's not allowed to be done Baal Peh without looking inside. So the wax would be problematic in such a case. The Prima Gadim is actually makel on this. The Prima Gadim says, Vadei Shari Likros Al Peh, in such a case, it would be totally permissible. Now you should know that Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about this question in three cases in Igros Moshe. All over Igros Moshe, he talks about this. This is a fascinating, I don't know what to do with this. He never quotes the Prima Gadim. I don't know, he couldn't have missed the Prima Gadim. I'm just not sure why he didn't quote it. Maybe his edition had wax over the Prima Gadim in that area. But the Rav Moshe Feinstein has this tshuva in multiple places. He's machmer, he's strict on this. He assumes you always have to read the word inside. We'll come back to him, B'li Nedar Mit Hashem, towards the end. But he's machmer against this Prima Gadim, who says that the concept is that you're reading it out loud, you're reading it Baal Peh. Like you said, it's an exception, and therefore, even if the word is covered, you'd be allowed to read it Baal Peh. Yeah.
This is similar. I was learning this study a while back on Basar B'Cholov, where if you have Cholov mixed in with Basar, Batal B'Shishim, so one way that people are touching it is, that it's allowed, like you said, the first month, the first foot here, that it's allowed because that the trait is allowed, that the Batal B'Shishim is
yes.
allowed.
Yes, Nepa.
The real way to learn it is that no. This was the Beit Chiddush, that when there's Basar B'Cholov, it's Batal B'Shishim, that all of it becomes kosher.
Nepa. Yeah. It turns into turns Basar B'Cholov. Yeah, that's a similar type of chakira. Similar type of chakira, right. Right. So that's the chakira the poskim draw over here. Again, you're seeing it halach l'maisa, which is so fascinating when the lumdus really blends with the halach l'maisa. So that's what the Prima Gadim, what the Magen Avraham, what the Mishneh Berurah really also, what the Shai Ephraim, what the Ramesha Feinstein are all clarifying over here, is this chakira, how to learn the Tshuva Sarashpa. Certainly it's halach l'moshe Misinai, but what exactly is that halach l'moshe Misinai? Now, what's the most famous case? It's okay if you cheated. What's the most famous case of a Kriya Uchsiv? Every single day.
Hashem.
Shem Hashem. Excellent. It's written Yud K, Vav K. Yud and then Hey and then Vav and then Hey, correct? Now let us say those together because the Mishnah in Maseches Sanhedrin says you lose Olam Haba if you do so. And I already made 3 Shaduchim, so I don't want to mess with it. So I stopped saying Ashrei years ago. I don't need this stuff anymore, but I don't want to lose it. So you can't say it, but Yud K, Vav K. It says the letters like that. How do you pronounce it? Not that way. We pronounce it Amonai, right? We pronounce it Adnus. Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. So it's written one way, and every time you open a Sefer Torah, every time you say a bracha, every time you look in a sitter, any time you look anywhere, it's Yud, K, Vav, K, and yet we say it completely differently. We pronounce it completely differently. Where does that come from? So that's a Gemara. The Gemara, the first source in the second page in your sheets, the Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Nun Amud Aleph, it also appears at the end of Maseches Kedush, towards the end of Maseches Kedush, and Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, V'hiyo b'yoma hu ye Hashem echad v'shmo echad. That on that day, Hashem will be one, and His name will be one. So the Gemara says his name will be one in the future. I'm skipping parts of the Gemara, but his name will be one in the future. His name is one today. We believe in Achdus Hashem today. That's one of the first Yikarim of the Rambam in the Yud Gimel Yikarim. One of the first things to believe is Achdus, the unity, the distinct and special unity of Hashem, indescribable and also incomparable to anything else, the unity of Hashem. So what do you mean only in the future his Shmo will be Echad, will be one name? So the Gemara says, no. Olam Hazeh is different than Olam Haba in the following sense. In Olam Hazeh, we see the Shem Hashem written Yud Kei Vav Kei, but we do not pronounce it that way. We pronounce it as Adnos. In the next world, or Mashiach, whatever the Gemara is referring to, we'll even pronounce it the proper way, the way that it's written. And the Gemara says it's a Gzeres HaKasav. The Pasuk in the Sefer in Parsha Shmos says, Zeh Shmi La'olam, Zeh Zichri La'dor Dor. The Pasuk says, this is my name for all eternity, this is my memory, my remembrance for every generation. Now the Pasuk says, Zeh Shmi La'olam, but it's written Chaser Vav, it's missing a Vav, so it could have been pronounced Le'alem. Right? It could have pronounced li'alim. What would li'alim mean?
Hidden.
To hide, right? Ha'alama means something that's hidden or confused and away from you. So li'alim means to hide it, which means zeshmi li'alim. You have to hide my name in this world. So it will be written one way, but you can't pronounce it that way in this world. We know that's why we don't say those witnesses. We don't pronounce it the way they pronounce it because we're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to say the word the way that you would punctuate it. If you're not even sure if they're correct, but even if they were correct, we wouldn't be allowed to pronounce it that way because Zeshmi La'alein, we have to hide the pronunciation in this world. That's what the Gemara assumes. So this is our most famous case of a Kriyuch Sid. Definitely our most common case. So how does this case work? Is this a similar example, like we said before, some of the posts can say it's just that you're allowed to say it Baal Peh? Or is there another way to learn the word Hashem over here that's maybe more similar to your lamdas, the more, mechudish, novel side of the Chakira, that maybe there's a pronunciation versus a written aspect to the word Yud Kei Vav Kei. So here is where the Brisker Rav comes into play. There's a sugya in Maseches Sanhedrin and Daf Nun Vav. And hey, Nun Vav, the Gemara discusses the Ishser of Birkas Hashem. It's a euphemism. It really means cursing Hashem's name, but we refer to it as Birkas Hashem because we don't want to say such a thing. So the sugya of Birkas Hashem, we assume it's an Isser Daraisa to curse HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That makes a lot of sense, right, to all of us. It's an Isser Daraisa, but there are details in terms of when you are going to be Chayiv Misa for performing such an act, such a terrible, heinous act of cursing Hashem, Birkas Hashem. If you use the Shem Hashem to curse the Shem Hashem, you need to be Mevarech, the Mizbarech. You need to use the Shem Hashem in applying a curse to the Shem Hashem, then you can be Chayiv Misa, if not, not. So the Gemara there discusses whether all Shemos Hashem, even Kinuyim count, meaning even Racham, Mechana, and all the names that we use that are really nicknames, or specifically the Shem HaMafurish. Kitzar HaMaisa will streamline over here. So we assume that you need to use the Shem Hashem, the Shem HaMafurish, the Shem HaMiyuchad, in order to accomplish this Kilas Berchas Hashem. Source number 9, you have in the Rambam, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Beis, the Rambam says, "Ena magadei chayv skila ad sheyifari Hashem hamiyuchad shel arba osios yud kei vav kei." But he says, "Shehu aleph dalis nun yud v'yivarich losav Hashem and Hashem osheinam nechakim." Then he quotes, "V'yesh mishem mafarish." There are those who say, "Sheinu chayv elash al shem yud kei vav kei." V'ani omer shal shneim hu niskal. So the Rambam says a fascinating thing over here. He says there are those who disagreed with him. There are those who said that the only way you can be chayiv skila for Birchas Hashem is if you pronounce Yud Kei Vav Kei with its pronunciation, Yud Kei Vav Kei, however it's supposed to be pronounced. Then you could be chayiv on Birchas Hashem. But if you said Adnus Amonai, right, you said the pronunciation that we usually do in this world of Yud Kei Vav Kei, you would not be chayiv skila for having cursed the Shem Hashem in such a case. Says the Rambam, I disagree. As long as you say Shem Hashem, Shem HaMiyuchad, whether you say it Yud Kei Vav Kei with its pronunciation as it's written, or whether you say it with the pronunciation we're supposed to use in this world, of Adnus, of Aleph Dalet, Nun Yud, either way you'll be Chayav Skila. Says the Brisker Rav, Velvula Salavitchik, source number 10, doesn't make any sense. The Rambam Shita is neither here nor there. There's only one Shem HaMiyuchad. There's one Shem HaMiyuchad, Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's pronounced one way, it's written another way, but there's one Shem HaMiyuchad. So how can the Rambam say they are equally Chayav on this way that if you pronounce it the way it's spelled, or if you pronounce it the way we pronounce it in this world, how could you be equally chayiv? It's one shame. There's only one name. There can't be two names. What's the answer? What's the answer? The Brisker Rav says, it is one name. Like you said before, it is one name. The word Yud Kei Vav Kei is written Yud and then Hey and then Vav and then Hey. Now, in some plane, in some world, that may be pronounced the way that it's written. But in our world, that word is read Amonai. That word is read with the shame Adnas, Aleph Dalas Nun Yud. It's not that we're substituting. We're saying instead of saying Yudkei Vavkei, we're going to make up a new word and call it Amunai, some nickname for Hashem. No, 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 no. That is the pronunciation of Shem Hashem in this world. That's how you read the word in front of your eyes. This is what the Brisker Rav suggests. That's why the Rambam is able to say that whether you use the Shem of Yudkei Vavkei in its pronunciation in the real way, or if you use the pronunciation the way we say it, Amunai, Adnos, either way you're going to be Chayev Skila because those are both the same Shem Hashem. One is the way it's written, one is the way it's pronounced, but they're interchangeable. They are one word, they're one shame. Now the Brisker Rav implies this over here. He says it a little more explicitly in Parshas Va'eschanan and in his commentary on the Chumash, but it sounds like from the Brisker Rav, from Mevelvel, that he thinks this is distinct from all other cases of Kriyuch Siv, meaning generally speaking, he assumes like you did in Kriyuch Siv, that it's a substitute, it's a new word that we're pronouncing Baal Peh. But when it comes to the Shem Hashem, it's actually the pronunciation of the word in front of you. Yud Kei Vav Kei is actually Al Pi Emes pronounced Adnos, with Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. That's what the Brisker Rav seems to assume. Rav Moshe doesn't believe it. He quotes the Brisker Rav, which is interesting. He quotes Rav Elvel, and he says it can't be Rav Elvel. Thinks this Rav Elvel must think that even by all Kriyuch Siv, you have to read inside. But I always thought that Rav Elvel didn't imply that. Rav Elvel implied that in all of the cases, Yishkevena, if you said it Baal Peh, you said it without looking inside, the wax was on it, whatever, all those cases, he think that was totally kosher. A Brisker Kula. Whoever heard of a Brisker Kula? It was a Brisker Kula Rav Elvel Soloveitchik. I was never sure about this, but I found in the Sefer of Shirim of Meir Soloveitchik, the son of the Brisker Rav in Parshas Shmos. So he says, black and white, he says that his father felt that way. His father felt that in all cases of Kriyuch Siv, you could read it Baal Peh, and only the Shem Hashem is different. It's unique in that this is the very pronunciation of the Shem Hashem. So Halach L'maisa Machlokes, where you come out again with a Brisker Kula, but that goes through the whole transition between the Lamdas to the Halach L'maisa to the case of Shem Hashem from Laning, as we mentioned, Magen Avraham, the Prima Gadim, the Shai Ephraim, all the sources from before, they're all arguing about the same Nakuda. When you have a Kriyuch Siv, is it that two things are related to by one word, or is that we have one word which is written one way and a substitute word which we can pronounce separately and distinctly, and that would even be allowed Baal Peh? The truth is, this Maila of the Torah, to be able to say a Kriyuch Siv, it starts as confusing. It starts as ambiguous. It starts as even, it raises a suffix, it raises a doubt to the Masorah, to how could it be the Radak's answer, the Barbanel's answer, how could it be the Torah would make Chas V'Shalom make mistakes or be confused? But what comes out after you learn the Sugya, you learn the Maharal, you learn the Brisker Rav, you start to see it's not a case of suffix. It's a case of incredible depth, incredible brilliance, sheer divinity that the Torah enlists when it composes every single word in the Sefer Torah. We have a klal in the Torah. We can't mimic Kadosh Baruch Hu in this way. But we do have a klal in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, you have it in Source 11, the Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Gimel, it's also a Gemara in Sukkah and elsewhere. The Gemara tells us, La'olam yishana adam mederach katzar, mederach katzara, that a person should always be malami to his Talmidim, teach his Talmidim Torah in a derach katzar, in a lashon katzara, in a shorthand manner. You should never talk for too long. You should never have an arichas dvarim when it's not necessary. You should always talk in a shorter fashion. Why is that? So the Rambam has a different understanding, but if you look in Source 11, Rashi tells us in a few places in Shas, I put for you from Garam Pesachim here, Rashi says, "L'fi shemiskayemes girsa shel ha'yoser min ha'arucha." Because when a person talks at length, they go on and on and on. So we tend to be impressed by people's arichas dvarim. We tend to be impressed that, oh, he could talk so long and he said so many things. And at the end of the day, you go home and you think, what did he really say? What did he really say? He talked for so long. I have no idea why you guys are looking at me like you're experiencing that right now. Yeah, he's talking for so long, I have no idea what he really said. Sometimes you hear a vart and it's said in 5 words, 8 words, and you're like, that's emes. He nailed it. He got it right. And the lashon katzar is something you can take in, you can take home, and you can spread to the next person. Says Rashi, the kiyum of Mesiras HaTorah, of the Masoras HaTorah, of the tradition of Har Sinai going to the next generation, is kept by kitzer, by talking in shorthand, by talking with brevity and precision and accuracy. That's the way to preserve the Masorah. The second we start going on and on, dragging everyone a cup by talking forever, that takes away from the ability to transmit the Masorah. If you look in Source 12, we won't read it inside, but Rav Soloveitchik had this so beautifully when he depicted the Shita of Brisk, the Shita of his father, of his uncle, of his grandfather, and his hesped for the Brisker Rav. That's what Mado Dech Midod is. It's an essay, which is a written version of the hesped that the Rav gave for his uncle, the Brisker Rav. So there he says, that was the Shita of Brisk. Not to talk at length, not to talk forever, but that every word and every motion meant something. It was meaningful. They were able to compact and compress and condense so much into so little the kvod and teferes of Torah through the kitzer halashon, through talking in a shorthand manner. They just published a year and a half ago a biography of Rav David Soloveitchik. Anyone here learn by Rav David? Yeah? Oh, Rav David Soloveitchik biography. You read the biography? Shagetz. So Meller wrote a biography. He writes so quickly. So it came out right after he passed away, basically. He wrote a biography called Achil Nador Daya. So in there they have a story that when the Brisker Rav said Chaburas to, he said Shir, so there were 25, I don't know if they were Bachrim or Yungalite, I'm not sure, but he said 25 guys were in the Shir, and they would break up into smaller Chaburas to Chaz of the Shir. So one of the Chozim was Rav David, the son of the Brisker Rav, and he had a small group of Talmidim who he would tell over the Shir to and Chazer it with them. So they used to ask Rav David questions to ask his father to clarify certain points. So one time Rav Eliyahu Chazan, he said in the book, he asked Rav David a very interesting question. He said, when your father, Rav Elva, was giving the shir, so he said a shtickle Torah, and he moved his hand like this. He swerved his hand like that while he said the shtickle Torah. I wasn't sure what he meant by the swerve of the hand, because you ask your father what he meant. So you read it and you smile. Like, he moved his hand the same way we all move our hand when I talk. But Rav David took it seriously. He asked his father, he asked Rav Elva, what did you mean by that hand motion? And Rav Elva said, ah, yeah, I meant the following. And he gave a whole shtickle Torah to explain why he moved his hand in such and such way in the middle of his Zohar Torah. Because that's what the Rav is describing over here also. That's Shitas Bris. The Rav says about Reb Chaim also. Every hand motion means something. The Torah is such a beautiful document. Every word, every letter, every discrepancy in pronunciation, everything means something. Everything has further and further depth. It's endless, miraculous depth in every single word. So we should focus as we gear up for Matan Torah, for Chag Kabbalah Satorah. We should gear up to learn the Torah, to accept the Torah, and to look deeply into every single word that we learn in the Torah Shebaal Peh, in the Torah Shebichsav. We should pay attention to the words that we read and realize the depth goes and goes and goes, and we have a life's work in front of us to gain a clarity in the entirety of Torah. Everyone should have a wonderful Yontif, upcoming Yontif. Yashir Tayyar.